What a bummer. The Wall Street Journal NBC poll last month asked the question, will life for our children's generation be better than it has been for us? And the result was depressing. Fully 76% said that they do not have such confidence. And it was the same with the wealthy and the poor, men and women, Republicans and Democrats, old and young, east and west, north and south. And it had nothing to do with whether you like the one who is the President of the United States now or not. The numbers were similar when there was a Republican president. There is a loss of confidence that is exacerbated by the threat levels of terror organizations that we are all familiar with. There's an old saying that confidence is silent, insecurity is loud. In the story that we read today from the book of Exodus, Moses is finding the people to be loud, louder and louder. Are we there yet? How much further do we have to go? My feet hurt. Are we there yet? I think I'm going to throw up. I'm tired. I'm bored. Are we there yet? I'm sick of manna. I'm frustrated. I need a break. Are we there yet? Can't we rest? Do we have to wait in line for the manna? Are we there yet? Where is God? Where is this Yahweh you talk about? And these are the same people who had observed the plagues in Egypt, the same people who had been liberated from slavery, the same people who had witnessed the parting of the Red Sea, the same people who had been grateful at one time for manna to eat. These are the same people who are getting louder and louder in their loss of confidence. It was hot. They were thirsty, the cattle were dying, the children were crying, tempers were flaring. The scene is described as taking place in a place called Rephidim in the wilderness, and nobody knows where that was. We just know that it was a place that they did not want to be. It was a place where their insecurities made them loud in their complaints. Heat and thirst have a way of cutting through the red tape of politeness. Where is God now? There is no substitute for water, the basic element of life that sustains them. So the deepest question of faith, where is God, was tied to the deepest material reality of life, where is water? That is to say, the water question was turned into the God question. As a result, they dared to ask the question, is God with us or not? In their quarrelsome, testy relationship with Moses, they ask a variation of the question articulated by Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady. Don't talk of love, show me. Don't talk of water, show me the water. Don't give me pious platitudes, show me. You brought us out here, now show us the water. And we're all really sympathetic with Moses. Poor guy. After all, it wasn't his fault that they were thirsty. He was just as thirsty as they were. He was only following what he believed to be the leadership of God. In fact, if we had been in his shoes, we would have been tempted to say, "Hey, I didn't want this job in the first place. Don't give me any grief after all I have done for you." But instead of saying something like that, Moses follows a different plan. "Strike the rock," says the Almighty. "Strike it. Hit it hard. Just do it. Water will come out of it so that the people may drink like blood from a turnip, like a purse from the ear of a sow, like joy from sorrow, like hope from despair, like Easter out of Good Friday. It happens. And we can't explain it. We just know that it happens. And this story about water gushing from a rock in the desert is our story. It's our experience, our faith, our hope. It prompts us to ask the contemporary questions. Is there cool water rushing from the rock of nations exhausted from constant conflict? Is there such a hope? Is there life-giving water for the person who is wandering in the wilderness of depression, or the wilderness of addiction, or the wilderness of doubt? Is there refreshing water for the person facing the heat of cancer radiation, the fear of illness, the agony of post-traumatic stress disorder? Is there relief for the person who feels dried up inside, thinking they're worthless, living a personal hell and wondering whether they will ever be good enough? Does the water still come? Those are the contemporary questions. Many years after this story, Jesus would meet just such a person. She's nameless in our gospel story. We know her as the Samaritan woman at the well. Jesus begins by asking her for a drink of water, but then quickly reverses the conversation by saying, "I have asked you for water, but you should really be asking me for water, for I have the water of life." And this woman, anxious, spiritually parched, brittle, says, "Sir, give me this water so that I may never be thirsty." This exchange is a dramatic way to make the claim that in this story, Jesus is doing what only God can do: give water in a barren life. Turn an inner wilderness into a productive life and give hope where there was no hope. Only God can do that. To some, she was just another nobody, relegated to second or third class status, ignored by others, despised by many because of her race, ostracized because of her lifestyle, avoided because of her gender, feared because of her ethnicity, shunned as unorthodox because of her religion, nothing but a dog, as the Jews called Samaritans. It is hot. It's thirsty. She takes her bucket to the only source of water she knows, lets it go down into the well in the heat of the noonday sun, and as she's pulling up the bucket, she encounters the words of the man sitting on the side of the well. She at first tucks her head and avoids him. She ignores him. Of course she does. It's social convention. It's an unspoken rule. She would act as if he were not present. She draws her water on up to the surface. And he breaks the silence. And when he does that, he crosses that most formidable barrier in human history, that barrier that separates people from one another by prejudice, by social convention, by hatred, by fear. He breaks that barrier, cutting through all the pretensions and the red tape, crossing over the social expectations and cultural norms built up over centuries. He speaks to her. And in doing so, he becomes the Jewish man speaking kindly to a Palestinian woman, the Sunni man speaking kindly with a Shiite woman, the Christian fundamentalist speaking with a transgendered woman, the Republican speaking kindly to a Democrat, the oil magnate speaking kindly with an environmentalist, the farmer speaking kindly to the urban sophisticate, the majority speaking kindly to the minority. Doesn't Jesus have any respect for our long-established boundaries? Doesn't Jesus know about our culture wars? When the disciples returned from an errand, we are told that they were astonished that he was speaking with a woman. I would think so. That's an understatement if there ever was one. Of course they were. They were still caught up in the old right and wrong, them and us, good and evil dichotomies. And as far as they were concerned, they had been taught that there was an evil empire and Samaria was the capital of it. But have you noticed, as you read through the Gospels, this conversation Jesus had with the woman at the well is the longest conversation recorded by Jesus or about Jesus than any other conversation in the entire New Testament, the very longest. He looks right into her eyes and gives her the respect that no one had given her for no telling how long. He doesn't care about social taboos. He doesn't care about what people think. He knows that this is a woman who deserves care and respect. All he cares about is giving her living water for a thus far barren life. This is extraordinarily good news, friends. Into the desert of a failed, defeated, dejected, defamed, demoralized, depressed life comes the cool, clear, life-giving water of life. From the hard rock of a failed, floundering, faltering, forsaken, fallen life comes the pure, cool water that quenches the deepest needs of life. This is good news for any culture that is thirsting, thirsting for the water of life. Could it be today that there is someone here in this room who is thirsty for this water of life? Famished for it, yearning for it. Do you find yourself complaining, tired, fatigued from trying to create your own spiritual water supply by pursuing larger portfolios and the latest fashions or longer vacations or loftier titles or the latest iPhone? Have you noticed that such attempts can leave us still thirsty? Have you noticed that the accumulation of things can leave us full of trinkets but empty of meaning? These scripture stories today invite us to ponder these questions. They also invite us to stand back while God, in this very moment, breaks through all the taboos of history and social convention and even logic to supply us not with a trickle, but a deluge of refreshment. Stand back and stand by, for we are thirsty people. The staff is raised over the rock. Jesus stretches out his hand of invitation, and God is longing for us to say, "Give me this water that I may never thirst again."